Hi, welcome. It's our roundtable panel, and we have all of you here, and it's very nice to have our panel here. We welcome you. Real quick, we want to thank our terrific hosts yesterday at the at MPAC and Albany Symphony Orchestra. We had a very fun broadcast, so that was a lot of fun. And so we thank them, but we're back in the studio doing the panel, and let me introduce them to you right now. WAMC's Alan Chartok is here. Good morning, Alan.
Indeed.
Hello, Alan. And we also welcome investigative journalist Rosemary Armeo and Albany professor, University at Albany professor. How are you?
Good. Very good. Thank
you. Excellent. And also, Libby Post is here.
Hi.
Our wonderful friend who came in at the very last moment. Political consultant extraordinaire, Libby Post.
So if I don't sound like I know what I'm talking about, you all know why. Although I've been able to fake it before.
Yeah, you can fake it. Well, we weren't here yesterday to talk about this, so let's talk.
I know I almost exploded that we weren't here to talk about it.
All right, so let's talk about Jill Abramson. This is the story that everybody has, everybody, I think, the newsies are talking about, right?
This is not just a news story. This is not just a media story.
No, it isn't, although it's harder to find in the mainstream, I think.
That's because you're a man, maybe. This is one of those seminal things about...
No,
it is. No, it is,
no,
Joe.
No, 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 no,
the firing of this woman.
No, no, no.
The firing of this woman.
Yeah.
This
no,
is
no,
going to
no.
be the
my
voice.
My point was that it was harder to find in the mainstream press on the front pages, and when you do the search of the news, that it was not a prominent story.
Front page, Washington Post, New York Times, New Yorker. It's a major story,
and I agree
and,
with
and
you. It's a major
and I
story.
Think it may be overlooked by some people in the same way that the great story of Jill Abramson's career,
but
the
I don't
Anita Hill hearings, was overlooked. Women see it in a different way than men. This is
no,
our
that's
life.
Not true.
This is our life in a
yes,
newsroom
it is.
That's on
that
trial.
Is not true.
It is true. Maybe you, as the lovely feminist man that you are, Alan. Wait, the lovely feminist man that you are. I do see it the way we see it, but I can tell you millions upon millions of men don't see it the way we do. This woman was fired because she was pushy,
because she was
acting like any other person, regardless of gender, would have acted in that job.
Well, we're going to disagree a little bit, Libby, because I think she was always like this. She's kind of, I don't know if I can say the B word on the air, but she was brusque, mean. I'm not.
So
I didn't. Wait,
so
it does mean something. Why was she hired in the first place? It wasn't like she instantly turned into the B
That's
word.
Right. That's
Alan
right.
Is,
she was picked.
I need Alan to be a little bit louder.
Okay.
If
okay.
Alan can be a little bit louder.
Sounding?
You need
is this sounding bad or good?
Yeah, if you
or
can
what?
If you can turn it up on your end, Alan, just a little bit.
I don't think I can, but I can try. Is this any better?
Yeah, yeah. There you
is
go.
That any better?
That is better.
Oh, that's
oh,
so
good.
Much better,
okay,
Alan.
Good.
Oh, good.
good. All right.
Great.
Okay, yeah. So now. Okay.
But I've been listening with great interest. I've been listening with great interest to this discussion because one of the things that I found fascinating, and I know our two women panelists are going to agree with us, at least I hope they will, that the Times coverage of the matter is pretty good. You know, they, whoever the reporters are who are doing the work on this thing, have certainly left nothing out. Am I wrong about that?
David Carr and Margaret Sullivan have done wonderful reporting on this for the New York Times. The leader of it is probably Ken Oletta from the New Yorker.
Yes. That was the first article
I read. And Politico, of course, wrote the first stories about Abramson about a month ago, in which they talked about how there was unhappiness with her management style. She's kind of cold and humorless. Hell of a reporter. Just one
so
of the
what,
best.
You know, the fact is that there are plenty of guys who are cold and humorous,
humorless,
and they don't get called out on the carpet
Libby,
for
the
it.
Point is they wouldn't have gotten the job in the first place. Sulzberger has not been blamed for this. The publisher of the New York Times likes to hire the unobvious candidate. He put Raines in, Harold Raines, above Bill Keller, who was the obvious choice, and then had paid the price.
Mm-hmm.
He was a horrible editor and had to let him go. In this same case, he had Dean Baquet here, the first black man who's going to be the editor of a big newspaper. He's supremely, supremely talented, both as a manager and as a newspaper man, different than Abramson. But he wasn't picked. And now we have this humiliating moment because Sulzberger has to admit his first pick was wrong. He's a bad publisher. We haven't heard that.
Was his first pick wrong?
Yes, I think it was. She was never going to work out in that newsroom. She's just kind of a mean person. She's not a good manager.
You know, I read a piece this morning. I don't remember where it was from. I think it might have been, I don't remember. It might have been Politico or, oh, no, it was Slate. About
Slate.
How she was
That's
such
one
a
woman, yeah,
great
Amanda.
A great role model for all the women in the newsroom. And then how she helped them come together and feel good about their roles in that newsroom.
And she also has spoken before the Women and Journalism Symposium. She is a wonderful role model for women. That putting her in the role of executive director was not her best and highest use because of her management deficiencies, which Jadine Bacquet does not have. So he puts her in there where she is going to fail. She could have been a role model to women as the managing editor, for example. It's a bad decision by top management at the Times that put this woman in a horrible
position.
Did they
think, you think they, he did it on purpose knowing she was going to fail?
No, I think he's a bad publisher.
That he didn't, he said, look, I put a woman in there, now I'm not never going to do it again?
I think he doesn't care about that at all. I think he's
very insensitive. Wait a second, Rosemary, before we go off on this thing, the New York Times is, in my opinion, the best.
I think we already have gone off on this, but go ahead.
It's the number one newspaper in the country and maybe the world. So you can't go off and say Arthur Sulzberger is a bad publisher because he publishes the best newspaper in the world. Now, every time anybody doesn't work out, somebody says, you set me up to fail. We've seen this throughout history. And I think, you know, you can't have it both ways. You, Rosemary, can't say she was a bad manager. He shouldn't have picked her, but also get the, you know, the rap on her, on him for not being properly supportive.
I absolutely can do that.
She was
a known quantity, Alan, and she could have been and was indeed before this extremely effective in that newsroom.
What did she do to deserve to be fired?
She was mean to people. They didn't like working for her.
Oh, come on.
But I mean, Mary,
how many?
Cause and effect.
No, I'm sorry. Wait.
I'd like to see men and women who are bad managers in that way. Why should it be unpleasant to work there? They shouldn't have the job. Jean Bacquet is going to be as good as she was.
I know, but there were plenty of men who are mean to their employees.
Right, and they ought to be fired.
Don't get fired.
We agree on that, Libby. Absolutely. And that's the unfairness of all this.
Well, you know, she took it seriously when they told her she was in charge.
Right.
And that was her big mistake because you know who is in charge. Sulzberger's in charge. And obviously, and if you read that first New York Times story the other day, which said that she wanted to put a second managing editor in to compete with the existing guy, what would have happened then is that apparently that was the nail in the coffin. And she decided she was going to do it. And because she was in charge. Well, yes and no. I mean, I'm the CEO of WAMC. Believe me, I try not to be mean to anybody. I try not to fire anybody. Usually, if somebody leaves WAMC, it's usually because they have fired themselves. I know that may sound like an out, but they do. They quit. But there's a big difference between that and our long-standing staff of people who've been around forever. I got to tell you, Sulzberger is the manager. In the end, he's the boss.
No one disputes that. She's out. That's it. But if you look at his record, he has had a number of editors in that top position. And in a place like that where there are long, long-standing employees, it should be more stable at the top. If he were better at hiring and picking the managers he could work with, this would not be happening. So all I'm just saying I think she was treated really unfairly. Why out immediately and in that embarrassing passing away in the middle of a news. That would never happen to a man.
That's right.
Sulzberger doesn't care about it. He doesn't at all. Another reason I say he's not a good publisher. But is he in control and he has the right to do it? Of course.
What?
So I don't know who wants to. Well, I mean, like you were saying, to the man, but then you're also saying that Sulzberger has fired other people in that position who were men.
Yeah, so it makes it okay.
I mean, no. I don't understand
why I'm under attack here. I think because we're all saying very similar.
Foul. You're the attacker.
First of all, I don't think you're under attack. I don't mean to attack you.
We're having a spirited conversation.
However. You started off the conversation saying that I didn't understand this because I was a man.
Yeah, yeah. You don't understand, I think, the great emotion that women have about this. And you said, it isn't on the mainstream. It is a discussion everywhere, not just Newsies. Women.
I understand. Go ahead.
And I do like the
huge. It's a huge story.
It is a huge story.
We know that because it's symbolic of everything else that goes on
right.
in this particular
right.
Did it? Will you? Did it?
That happens, and also because the Times is the most important newspaper in the world.
But,
I mean, what could be more important? Yeah.
Did it lead? You know, not even did it make CBS Evening News? No.
I don't know.
But that's my point. That's the mainstream.
That's mainstream. CNN. Who watches that? It made CNN, absolutely. Yeah, it was on CNN.
It was on CNN, but it certainly wasn't there. You look and see how much time.
It's going to make the front page of print because this is a print story.
Absolutely.
Okay, so you have to make the distinction there. You know. And this is not a story that can be told in 30 seconds other than Sulzberger fired Abramson and, you know, and a blip. So it's
I think I'd put 300 Turkish miners dead as the top story over this number one. Look at what it's competing with.
But it's a complicated story.
It's one of those seminal moments, just like Anita Hill, where women everywhere said, wait, that's
right.
us.
Right.
I see me and her. We are doing that with Jill Abramson, saying the way we act and the way we are treated in our workplace is different than men we work with.
I can't tell you how many times I've heard this about me. I'm pushy. I'm the B word. I'm too strong. I'm strident. You know, well, that's tough. You know, the fact of the matter is,
It also may be tough, but it's also not true. I mean, I know you. I've known you for many, many years.
Well, Alan, it's our anniversary.
Is it?
Yes, I graduated 30 years ago this Sunday.
Oh, my God. It is not true. And if people say it about you, that is really bad news.
Well, it doesn't necessarily have to be true.
But it is true about Jill Abramson.
Well, that's right.
It is true about Jill Abramson. She's hard to work with. Everyone says that. And it's not even surprising. She's a supremely talented investigative reporter. They are the worst people in the world to work with. Why is she the executive editor?
Yeah, but except that is it necessary to be mean to be in charge?
I don't think so.
Is it necessary to be mean?
Dean Baquet said
I don't think so. He said
John Carroll, a great editor at the Baltimore Sun in Los Angeles, taught me you can be a great editor and humane. I believe he will be. But Sulzberger didn't look for that. He wanted the name. He wanted to say, I put the first woman in. Are you saying,
Rosemary, that any investigative reporter who has those kinds of personality traits can't be an executive editor of a newspaper?
Obviously they could. She was for 3 years, but I don't think they should be. That's not her highest and best use. Baquet, great investigative reporter, won a Pulitzer at Chicago. Mm-hmm. He will do it. He's a different personality. Managing skills are different than reporting skills.
I understand that, but Alan, just let me make this one thing.
Yeah, sure, of course.
The thing is this, is that women, especially women of her generation, and she's close to my generation. She's 60, I'm 56. Okay?
She's my generation.
She's your generation. So, okay. I don't think women of our generation have necessarily been socialized, raised, or whatever, on how to use power well. I made this point on Monday, and we see they see men as the role model in using power because there's not many women
right.
who are 60, 70 years old who are Fortune 500 company
right.
and have been in there for a long time and been a good role model. So I think that that's part of this situation as well, and that, you know, women, as much as now I think it's different. I think, it, you know, the whole lean in thing and people, women are making it, it's easier now for women to get into top positions than it was when we were younger.
Yeah, I think
and I think that's part of what's going on
I do. I think that's why this is part of the reason that there's such discussion and strength of feeling about this whole issue. Absolutely.
One last thing here, and that is it's you got to take a break.
Yeah, we got to take a break.
I just want
to. Go ahead.
But I wanted to say it's situational. If you're the leader of the New York Times or of WAMC or something, something may be going on that you want stopped. So you put a strong woman leader in charge to clamp down. Then when things get a little bit better or different, it becomes situationally different. And then you make a change. That's a leadership prerogative. And sometimes it needs to be done.
But you don't do it immediately.
Okay.
Get out of the office right now. I'm done.
All right, we got to take a break. We'll come back. We'll do letters. We'll
read letters.
We'll yell at each other and more, and it'll be great. We're going to take a break. We welcome your letters. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Roundtable at WAMC.org. We'll be back after this short break.
Through a misty scene of what might have been. Dreaming of the green hills, where we could fly.
Bumper music this morning is the Moody Blues' Justin Hayward, who is going to be playing at the Bardavon in Poughkeepsie tomorrow night at 8 o'clock. Mm. Great music that we'll be hearing throughout the hour, and you can find out more about the concert, bardavon.org, bardavon.org, the Moody Blues' Justin Hayward. So really good stuff, and we'll be hearing more from him and more from some more great music coming up later in the hour. Real quick, before we get to the letters and everything, a bit of a mea culpa. The tone, Alan can go into these individually, but the overall tone of the letter is, what the hell are you talking about? Because we went from 0 to 60 in our yelling at each other and didn't actually tell people what we were talking about, which is sort of my point that, like, a lot of people don't know this story. The New York Times replaced its executive editor, Jill Abramson, on Wednesday, ending what had been a sometimes stormy 32-month tenure by the first woman to lead the prestigious newspaper in its 163-year history. The Times said Abramson will be succeeded by her top deputy, Dean Baguette. Yes?
Baquet.
My apologies. Dean Baquet, the managing editor. Abramson, who worked in Washington for the Wall Street Journal and later was the Times' Washington bureau chief, apparently was fired by Arthur Sulzberger Jr., chairman of the New York Times Company and publisher of the paper. In remarks to the newspaper's journalists disclosing the management change, Sulzberger never explicitly said Abramson had been terminated, but he made no effort to suggest that she was leaving on her own accord. So that is what we are talking about. Now we will go to the letters. Alan.
Right. The first letter says, whoever's running the cameras today isn't doing it well. That's all it says. Live camera is still pointing to the incorrect control room. I have no idea what that means. Do you?
I don't know. Is it from now, Don?
No. It's from John.
Okay.
From John. Okay. Okay. Then Joel says, I love the round table, but I have no idea what's going on. Your point exactly, Joe. You made the point that a lot of people have no idea about this thing at all. Then Catherine said, why no mention of the disparity between Abramson's salary and most of her male predecessors in each of the positions she held at the New York Times? This was highlighted in the New Yorker piece entitled Why Jill Abramson Was Fired. Well, I have to, for my part, I just have to tell you, and it's an unlikely scenario that I become the defender of the New York Times, because, as you know, I've been fairly critical in the past. Sulzberger says it just isn't so. He says that she's making exactly what the people who preceded her
Ken Oletta has the has the figures in an article today, and there's a, something like a $100,000 discrepancy with the previous
$100,000 below.
Right. However, so you Bill Keller had been there many more years, and there are other reasons. The point was that she was pushing.
Yeah.
Well, also,
you think Sulzberger is lying?
I think he's incorrect.
Also, they are quoting, meaning in the Ken Oletta and I think Politico has reported on this as well, have printed her salary as managing editor as $398,000, and they're comparing it to the managing editor for news operations, John Geddes, who is making $100,000 more than that.
Yeah, that also annoyed her mightily.
Yes.
She was
getting paid less than somebody she was supervising?
I think
well, they're both managing editors.
Yeah.
Well, she's the executive managing editor. She's the top dog.
Well, she was making $100,000.
Yeah, okay. Then,
that's not okay.
Then Ellen wrote, also on page 11 of yesterday's New York Times, an article about Natalie Sotomayor-Grady stepping down from Le Monde after a heavy criticism about her management style.
I didn't know
that.
Okay. Interesting.
And Ashley says Rosemary and the other panelists might be interested in the linked article from Gawker, which supports Rosemary's assertion that the New York Times publisher Sulzberger completely mishandled the situation with Jill Abramson, which I totally agree with. And I also agree that her gender plays a role in how she was treated, characterized, and described during her time as editor. And then Carrie says, "Hi, folks. I'm a loyal listener, but please, in capital letters, recap what discussion you are." Okay, so you got that one. We did that in the beginning. Mel, maybe. Hello. I wish you had begun your current discussion by. Oh, that's
yeah,
the third
same
one.
Thing, yeah.
And comment. Yeah, and comment for Rosemary and everyone else. Yesterday on Roundtable, Rosemary wasn't on yesterday. Maybe the day before, but not yesterday. Yesterday on Roundtable, Rosemary made the statement relative to the changing climate, the worst yet coming our way, that she is, quote, glad to be as old as she is. That is a statement I've been making for many, many years. Hearing the comment makes me realize others feel that way also. Now, if I could get folks to realize this, the world always plays catch up, and now I believe we can never slow things down. All the opportunities for heeding the warnings fell on deaf ears and greedy capitalists. Don't these folks have grandchildren? Marjorie. Luke says, Rosemary is saying Abramson's sacking is okay because she was too mean? From the paper that had Bill Keller, parenthesis, who made fun of breast cancer patient on Twitter, and Abe Rosenthal in the same job? Really? Her journalism was first rate.
That
she did the job, and now she's not doing it anymore. LC.
She will do it. She is an amazing reporter, and we will not see the end of her work. And yeah, I think she should have been fired for being a horrible manager, but not in the way she was, just as those other two mentioned. Abe Rosenthal was legendary.
But they weren't. I agree. Because they were men.
Right.
And it was okay for them to act the way they acted. And that's the duplicity of this situation.
Correct. I hope we've explained to people now.
Oh, okay. Go close to the mic, Alan, because I'm having trouble hearing.
Is this any good?
Go ahead.
Yes, no.
Yes.
Okay, I'll put it up a bit. Okay, Elizabeth says, disrespectful behavior is unacceptable regardless of gender.
Right.
I don't know a thing about the story, but Libby and Rosemary are being disrespectful on the air. I am a woman and agree that women have to face gender-based criticism, being clear, direct, or strong-willed, but it doesn't help to justify unprofessional behavior by calling out sexism, and certainly doesn't help to engage in it. Please raise your level of discourse. Employ thoughtful logic and speak to each other in a respectful manner. I'd say the same if you were men. and think that Ray Allen and Joe seem sometimes need to hear the same message. But this especially concerns me because you are representing women in the very context of professionalism and gender. And then Steve, Libby Post's untrammeled sexism is inexcusable. Stereotyping like attributing behavior to 59% of the world's population based on gender alone is a province of intellectual lassitude at best and bigotry at the worst. Yes, sexism still permeates our society and the workplace, but this behavior does not work. And I have worked for and with women and men throughout my 45-year working life and also served in numerous leadership roles. Mean bosses of either sex are never respected and seldom effective. They have no right. place in any organization. That's from Stephen. And there you go. That seems to be it.
Did he say men? Did he say men are 59% of the population?
He did.
Stereotyping like attributing behaviors to 59% of the world's population based on gender alone is
a little bit of a typo because it's 49%, but it's only 10%. But it's only $100,000.
I don't know.
Well, here's what I say. What?
Okay, go ahead. It doesn't matter. Go ahead.
Here's what I say. I love Libby. I love Rosemary. I have tremendous respect for both of them, and I don't like anybody yelling at them. Period.
Thank you.
Thank
Dad.
You.
Thanks, Dad. But let's just, Rosemary and I, be clear about this.
Yes.
This is spirited conversation.
Right.
We like each other. We respect
each other. We even socialize.
Right. We respect each other. And this is what having a conversation like this is all about. It's and if we were not to be animated, we wouldn't be. It wouldn't be good radio, but also we wouldn't be here.
Yeah, and Joe and Alan are both way more feminist than most men that I've dealt with in my career. So if I'm gonna say you don't get this, it means you have to get it. Why don't you get it? So I think they understand that. I'm sorry that our listeners.
Well, there are people who when you have spirited conversation, do get upset. They didn't grow up in the Shartok household, I can tell you that much.
You know, we used to debate the revolution at dinner every night. I mean, come on.
Yeah. So we're going to take a break in a minute, but why don't we go for it? Let's talk about the New York Times All Hour. The other thing that came out yesterday is a 96-page internal New York Times report. This was leaked by BuzzFeed. Okay, right. Obtained by BuzzFeed, sent to top executives by a committee led by the publisher's son, which paints a dark picture of a newsroom struggling more dramatically than is immediately visible to adjust to the digital world, a newsroom that is hampered primarily by its own storied culture. The Times report was finalized on March 24th. And we should note that all parties involved say that this decision has nothing to do with the Abramson firing. Mm-hmm. This report, but it does say that looking at sites like First Look Media, Vox, Huffington Post, Business Insider, and BuzzFeed, they are ahead of us in building impressive support systems for digital journalists, and that gap will grow unless we quickly improve our capabilities. The report warns our journalism advantage is shrinking as more of these upstarts expand their newsrooms. We are not moving with enough urgency. A New York Times spokesperson, Danielle Rhodes Ha, says that this copy of the report is a draft and not the final version, even though it was presented to newsroom management.
Well, a couple of things come to mind. Obviously, if Junior, Arthur O. Sulzberger Junior, wrote the report, one could intuitively, even though everybody denies it had anything to do with the firing of Abramson, one could hardly think that sides were not being chosen as this kind of thing was going on. And the one thing I've learned over the years, whether it be about a Cuomo or anybody else, don't fool with the son of. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Don't fool with the son of, because if you do that, then it gets really personal. And maybe, just maybe, hypothetically, some of that was going on here.
Yeah, when the report, Libby and I were just looking at the report in detail, it names a woman as a leader in how to bring the New York Times into the next century. And it was the same woman that Jill Abramson wanted to hire. That woman then would have been in a position to challenge Dean Baquet. So I think there is I think there are some connections between the recommendations of the report and what happened. And the other thing that comes to mind, of course, is that it's long been known that the Times is lagging. John Stewart did a just hysterical piece where they sent a reporter into the New York Times, and it just looked like a dinosaur. They cooperated with the interview, and I was like, wait a minute, you mean you're going to put out tomorrow news that we know about today that's already on it's already on all these websites? You're going to put it out tomorrow, old news, and that's okay? And so the Times,
but they do it all the time.
Exactly, and the Times looked ridiculous in that.
What's interesting,
I mean,
is,
I get up every... yeah, go ahead. Sorry.
Well, it's just that these stories about Jill Abramson says that she was really forward-thinking on all of this.
Yes,
and that she was pushing the newsroom towards this. And now this comes out, and it just seems like they cut their nose to spite their face on this one.
There are some control issues because, as I say, Baquet would have been threatened by the person she brought in. And also Mark Thompson, who's the head of the business side of the Times. And she challenged...
That's a big one.
Yes, it is. And they clashed terribly. And there was also the matter of the BBC investigation that the New York Times did. You remember that? They had a well-known personality who for 50 years had been a pedophile. And it was hidden. It was kept under wraps or not fully investigated by the BBC. And that's Mark Thompson. The New York Times story brought that out. So there's no love lost between those two. And Thompson wants control over digitization of the paper too. So it's a real interesting power struggle.
Well, and you know, if you go
wait a second, I'm a little confused. I think it's important to clarify this. Who is the pedophile?
It was Jimmy Savile is his name. He was a leading person.
Okay, but it wasn't Mark. But it wasn't Mark Thompson.
No. But thank you for clarifying that. No, Thompson was the head of the BBC. So in other words, he would have been like the bishops protecting
the
priests. Yeah, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, the thing is that one of the things that talked about in this story is that the notion of, well, if we do this whole thing digitally, I won't be on the front page. And being on A1 is so important to these. And it's a very old framework for being a journalist. But also their slogan is all the news that's fit to print, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, now they can print everything because it's an unlimited amount of newsprint because it's all digital. So it's like, are we going to be printing everything? Are we going to be, what's going to happen to the sense of discernment of the news that the gray lady has always done as the news leader?
The train, as everybody who listens to the Media Project or discusses this in journalism classes know, the train has left the station.
Yeah.
I mean, either you're doing it digitally, which the Times does. I'm sorry. I get up.
I
all
like
night
what the Times does.
Yeah, and I read every 2 hours. The thing changes. So when you buy the paper in the morning, which I don't do anymore, but I do pay them, for the digital delivery. It's not going to be the news that you're reading online at the time.
True.
Hello?
Again.
Yeah, no,
and again,
that's true.
This is not an issue just for the New York Times, too.
Every newspaper
in the world is facing it.
Right.
So.
And that report, is interesting because it goes into really some specific details of where they've screwed up, some major issues that they've had, some apps that have just been complete failures. And even the launch of the digital site of not being forward thinking enough in looking at how this would affect tablets and phones
and mobile devices one other thing under Jill Abramson was an amazing piece called Snowfall. Have any of you seen that? To listeners, I recommend look it up on the site. It's an amazing use of animation and words. It puts the words and photos and video together in a way. It's completely unlike any news story you've ever seen. And that that has an effect on how news will be presented in the future, too. She was not a piker on this at all.
No.
You're right.
No. What's really something is that the quoted in this is that there's a cadre of editors who remain unfamiliar with the web.
Oh, yeah.
Where have they been?
Yeah, no. And that was really frightening because they don't even believe that it should be a part of their duties. We have to take a break. And when we come back, we're going to get a lockbox update and we'll wrap up for this morning. We'll be right back after this short break.
Support for WAMC comes from Pioneer Post and Beam, a non-kit post and beam builder in Belchertown, Massachusetts, designing and erecting customized barns, artist studios, garages, and additions. PioneerPostAndBeam.com. Kenco Work and Play Outfitters, Kingston, now taking reservations for the newly opened Kenco's Interactive Archery Range inside the expanded Big Green Building on Route 28, atkenco.com. And Ashokan Center, Olive Bridge, presenting Uke Fest, a four-day music camp May 23rd to 26th with the All-Star Ukulele Concert on Saturday, May 25th, ashokancenter.org.
I could bounce right back again. Saw how the tears rolled down like sweet summer rain. Where does it leave me now? I found myself so free again.
Welcome back to our roundtable panel. A reminder that music we're listening to is the Moody Blues. Is Justin Hayward playing at the Bardavon in Poughkeepsie tomorrow night, and you can find out more by going to bardavon.org, bardavon.org. Megan Finnegan is with us to tell us how we've been doing with our lockbox challenge, an incredible challenge. We're looking to reach a $325,000 by June 2nd, the start of the fund drive. If we do so, Mr. Big will give us an additional $25,000. So with that $325,000 goal in mind, where are we, Megan Finnegan?
Well, Joe, we had an absolutely fantastic day yesterday, and we are now at $181,392 in the locked box.
That's good news.
How long does that give us to get in days? How many days?
We have 17 days. We need to raise another $143,608.
And that's how much a day?
That is just over $8,000 a day, Libby.
But of course, it always increases as you get closer.
It went really fast yesterday. And a lot of people are pledging for the personalized WAMC mug as well.
We got a listener from Housatonic who said, in this real world where quality of life has become a distorted and cheap commodity, real value persists at WAMC. There isn't enough money on the planet to cover its worth. I consider it a privilege and duty to do what I can for the lockbox. And they're getting a personalized mug.
I liked that.
But think about this, folks. Everybody think about it. My passion is that we've all done this together. We've all made this work. We tune in. We argue with each other. We write letters. We email. There are tens of thousands of us out there right now listening to this radio station. If every one of us does something now, we'll make this, and there'll be $25,000. And I want to just thank Mr. Big, who is, of course, somebody who knows about this stuff from Northwest Connecticut. He's just a wonderful man. He's doing this because he believes in the station, and that's his level of commitment. It's extraordinary, and it's, as you all know, it's not the first time he's done it, but he's a businessman, and he knows to incentivize us, and he's doing that. That's what's so great.
Excellent. Well, you can find out more information about the lockbox and the challenge. It's WAMC.org. Do what you can and do it. So we hope that we will have incredible news for you over the weekend. We'll obviously be banging the drum all weekend, but we want to knock your socks off with an incredible total on Monday. So as Alan said, we can do it today if we put our minds to it. The lockbox, WAMC.org, and you can also reach us by telephone, do it the old-fashioned way, 800-323-9262, and just go to extension 145 and take care of it there. We are officially out of time. Rosemary, Libby, Megan, and Alan, thank you so much. Have a great weekend.
You too.
You too, Joe.
Take care. Roundtable continues after this.